Welcome back to the Millennial Pastors Podcast. I'm Michaela Johnson.
And I'm Caleb Haynes.
And we're your guest co-hosts for season 10.
We're here having conversations around creation care and what it means to be Christian on planet Earth.
Over this season, we'll be chatting with scientists, theologians, and other Christians who are doing the work of Earth care in their specific context.
So we hope that this will bear fruit for you and your ministry and your work in the world.
Welcome back to this episode of the Millennial Pastor Podcast. I'm one of your guest hosts, Michaela Johnson, and I'm here with my co-host, Caleb Haynes, and we have the privilege today to talk to David Hilly. I'll read a quick bio that he has given me, and then we'll jump into some great conversation. David is originally from Spokane, Washington, and attended Northwest Nazarene University and graduated with a degree in biology in 2003. He worked for 2 years in environmental education at Mission Springs Outdoor Education in the Santa Cruz Mountains of California before moving to Costa Rica to co-manage SMU's Field Station and Semester Study Abroad program at Quetzal Education and Research Center. After leaving Quirk, he completed a Master's of Biology and a PhD in Ecology and Evolutionary Biology from the University of Oklahoma, during which he studied the populations and conservation issues of parrots in the Central American country of Nicaragua and co-authored a field guide to the birds of Nicaragua. He is now faculty in the biology department at NNU, where he teaches wildlife biology and ecology, and leads research on the biology and conservation of breeding common nighthawk populations in southwestern Idaho. He's been married 19 years to his wife, Sarah. They have 2 kids, Adele and Henry. And as an addition to that, you also are a native landscaping enthusiast. Is that all right?
Wow. Yeah. Sounds great. Sounds good. Sounds good.
That's Thank what you gave me. So
thanks for the introduction.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit, in addition to your bio, about how you got into the work that you do and why you enjoy it.
Okay. I feel so currently right now as a professor of wildlife biology and ecology at Northwest Nazarene University, just feel very grateful that the experiences I've had in my life, both education and work experiences, have brought me to what I'm doing right now. I truly feel like it's a place where my interests and my passions make it such that, you know, work doesn't seem like work all the time. You know, some of the time, sure, but not all the time. Just the passion of being able to apply interests in the natural world and in conservation through the lens and vehicle of education and working with others, both students, colleagues, and also in conservation projects, is just extremely fulfilling for me. So how did I get there? I think that for me, it really does start back with my education. I think that the world of the natural world and the purpose of being involved in the conservation of the natural world truly became a vivid possibility for me in college. I had one faculty member in particular. I was a biology student at Northwest Nazarene University. One faculty member in particular, Dr. Leon Powers, who I took all of my ecology courses from, and the passion that with which he taught it and the love that he obviously had as I was taking courses on mammals or ecology or birds was so evident, and it was infectious. He invited his students along with him to be a part of that experience. That was the precursor to a study abroad opportunity that I had in Costa Rica with the Latin American Studies program. And that semester that I spent in Costa Rica was kind of, it was kind of the point of no return for me. The amount of the combination of the vivid biodiversity that I experienced in the tropical country of Costa Rica, along with faculty that were teaching passionately about their love for that biodiversity, their love for creation, the integration of our faith with care of creation, and then being surrounded by other students who had that same interest was the point where I came back and basically said, you know what? This is stuff I want to do for a really long time. I think this is, these are things that I want to pursue.
What's up?
Yeah. So I met you for the first time in Costa Rica because I now have the position that you had. Were you the original, the OG station manager? You were, right?
By definition, field station manager, yes. So the, you know, the brief, real quick history there is that Leo and Zaina Finkenbinder were the founders of the Quetzal Education Research Center of Quirk, and operated and managed it for years. And then after their retirement, when Southern Nazarene University was trying to figure out how on earth to fill the void of Leo and Zaina, decided to create the field station manager position, which was, you know, a different aberration, not the founder or original creators of the project, but yeah, been in specifically in that position. Yeah, my wife Sarah and I were the original field station managers to serve in that role.
Yeah, big shoes to fill. Let me tell you. Let me tell you what. But
kind of you to say. Thank you.
How was your experience at Quirk? Your experience in Costa Rica? How has that shaped, if at all, shaped your trajectory in life and where you find yourself today?
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, I get quite emotional when I think about the impact that our time at Quirk has had on our lives. And, you know, specifically too, to think about the people who are responsible for Quirk even being there, folks that are just dear people, like Efrain Chacon and Leo Finkenbinder, who, the efforts that they have made to preservation of that land, the vision for their projects and businesses with the Chacon family or Southern Nazarene University. We are so indebted to all of their passions, and perseverance too. Our time at Quirk, I would say I entered into our time at Quirk knowing that I was interested in working in the natural world in some way. I just finished 2 years of being an environmental educator at a place called Mission Springs Outdoor Education in outside of Santa Cruz, California. Those were two very formative years for Sarah and I as we were starting to understand our environmental ethic and the way that we lived our lives in day-to-day basis, and also how we wanted to invest our time with work and volunteer. So came into Quirk with that interest, and then Quirk just kind of opened up a whole new world of being involved in education for me, and also being involved directly in research of biological diversity and just conservation projects in general. Really, those three things kind of tie together what Quirk is about: education, conservation, and research. And those three pillars really have held very steadfast and through with me to what I'm doing right now. So it was at Quirk where I discovered a love for doing research on biological diversity and conservation. It was at Quirk where I realized that in order to be a successful conservation biology practitioner, that one of the ways I could do that would be by being trained on how to do scientific research. Not the only way by any means. Conservation biology is a major diverse field, but for one way would be to learn how to do scientific research and do it well in a way that we can provide information about how to conserve populations of wildlife. And then not ultimately, but another way in which it was so important for me is that Quirk is where I had, it was like the central connecting piece to so many folks that spoke into my life personally, that mentored me towards being an educator at the university level. I spent several really formative times with a now colleague, Dr. John Cosell, in Costa Rica, where we had conversations about what my future could look like. And I remember this one vivid conversation where he said, you know, have you thought about getting a PhD? And my answer was like, well, no way. I've thought about getting a master's maybe, but PhD seems quite astronomical to think about. And he said, well, if you ever did, it sure would be fun to have you come teach at NNU someday. And that was, you know, at this point, that was about 15 years ago. And here I am now teaching at NNU with Dr. John Cosell. We're colleagues and partners in the program that we have going on at NNU. I could go on and on about Quirk. The students that impacted our lives, the way it impacted my family's life. My daughter was born there. But got to stop somewhere. But yeah, very special place. A lot of really special people wrapped up in the heritage and legacy of that project.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool. I'm going to raise my hand over here in the corner for a second as the one individual on this recording that has not been to Costa Rica or Quirk, et cetera. For our listeners out there, so I love that this is a Nazarene operated, you know, film research station situation in Costa Rica that educates, that happens. And honestly, Mikaela, until you, well, actually, I probably heard about it first from David at some point, and then you guys, and I was like, what, this exists, you know? So could you, again, maybe tell us what Quirk stands for, and then maybe give a quick or not quick, whatever, example of something specific that happens at Quirk that you guys research or that you guys do, and what that kind of just looks like on a day-to-day situation down there.
Go ahead, David.
Not me. I mean, sure. By the way, it's fantastic to be speaking to and the new field station managers. So please don't let me hog the mic here. I can share. So yeah, I can share a little bit. And of course, I think that what Quirk has done over the decades is morphed and changed. And I'm sure there are different highlights from different periods. But this is the biological field station that is owned and operated by Southern Nazarene University. It is located in the valley of San Gerardo de Dota, which is about 2 hours south of San Jose, heading towards Panama on the Pan American Highway, up in the cloud forests of the Talamanca Mountains. It was founded by Leo and Zeta Finkenbinder, who started up a very, very vibrant and essential relationship and collaboration with the Chacon family, Costa Rican family who owns a really large chunk of land in this valley. And long story short, now there is a private reserve with extremely successful ecotourism operation that the Chacons run. In fact, the Chacon family is considered to be some of the pioneers, if not the most important pioneers of ecotourism in Costa Rica. And
is that helpful for Costa Rica? Oh, ecotourism?
Mm-hmm.
Ecotourism would be one of their largest sectors of their economy. Mm-hmm. And it's been growing in that direction for the past, just kind of a general statement for the past 4 to 5 decades, where it has been a way in which the country of Costa Rica has been able to support their conservation efforts. So Costa Rica is known for being an environmental and ecologically friendly country with a great national park system, and the private sector of ecotourism has been a very important way in which they can support those efforts. So Quirk really benefits from the decisions of the Chacon family, but then also has been an important player too in the way in which the Chacon family has decided to make some of those decisions over the decades of relationship going back to the early 1980s. Quirk situated right there on the edge of their property. There's now surrounded by national forest, national park, and private reserve. Day-to-day basis, though, I'd say that Quirk in itself has been used very efficiently as an education facility for college students, mainly college students coming from North America, with programs being operated by different universities. More so in the recent history, one of the major ways in which Quirk is used is for a semester study abroad program that Southern Nazarene University runs. And it's a spring program that has typically about 10 students from different Christian universities from North America, many of them coming from the Nazarene institutions, where there are faculty that are coming from mostly those Nazarene institutions as well, too, coming to teach different topics related to conservation, theology, creation care, political science and history as well, too.
Oh, really? Oh, cool.
Yeah. I happen to be the professor for the Biblical Theology and Global Stewardship course that the students take. My husband, Caleb, and I are teaching that course. And David, you are part of like a piece of one of their courses. You come down for a week and teach them about ornithology and birds. And this semester, I really was not like super invested in birds for a while in the semester. I was preoccupied with like learning the ropes and taking care of these students. And then I think I aged like 30 years in a day because I was like, there are so many birds. This is amazing. I've like launched into my, like what people would say, like when you get old and retire, you start caring about birds. And now me and a couple of these college students are going out and looking for birds every single day. So yeah. I've now convinced my husband, Caleb, to be invested in birds as well. And so we've been going out and about when we came back to the United States to find some other birds too. And it's a good experience for the students. I'll also say briefly, the students, one of the goals, I guess, of work is that these students are learning, they're doing research, but also they're learning how to communicate that research. So we don't want them to be studying, you know, water quality in the valley or, you know, neotropical predators or whatever their project of choice for this semester is. We don't want them to study that and then hold all that knowledge themselves. We want them to be able to share that with the community because this partnership is so important between the Valley and the families that live there and Quirk. Quirk would not be there if not for the generosity and the relationship of these families. So one of the things we would like students to be able to do is to communicate what they're finding, what they're learning to the Valley, and then learning from people in the Valley who have been paying attention to their surroundings for a really long time. The Chacon family, like, they have a unlimited amount of knowledge when it comes to the space that they live, the pre-montane cloud forest, the birds that, you know, may have not been there and now they're seeing more often, you know, as our climate may change or as habitat availability changes. And so it's a really beautiful thing to watch these college students have their nose in the books, but also, you know, have feet on the ground too, and get to learn from other people who have been living there quite a long time and have a lot of knowledge themselves. So Brooke is a really beautiful place, and I am learning to love every bit of it just as much as you, I think, David.
Fantastic. You're in so many great things you expressed there. It's probably not fair for me to focus on this, but congratulations on being struck by the bird bug. That's great. And that'll serve you your whole life.
You know,
I'm
going to Trinidad and Tobago in like a week on Friday, and they have a pipinguan that's endemic to Trinidad. And I was like, all right, I'm going there for other things, but you better believe I'm keeping my eyes out.
You've got your target bird.
Yes.
Oh man, I love this. I love this nerd bird conversation we're having so much right now. It's running. So there's, I just randomly came across, I think like a year ago, this like movie on birding, and I'm trying to remember who was in it. It was like, oh man, yeah, it was pretty funny. So, but recently, and I may have even talked about this on here before, where like my wife and I stumbled across this Merlin bird app, you know, and it's so cool. You just like hit this button and all of a sudden it's like, telling you all the birds that are chirping and talking around to you. And, it's really funny because we were taking a hike at Radnor Lake, recently, and I just had the thing going like on my hike, and then all of a sudden we hear this like crazy loud turkey call. And then of course I realize, I look at my, I'm like, sure enough, like this, you know, ginormous, like straight up American turkey, like we find it, and it's just like standing on this log, just, you know, begawking like everywhere. And people are like, you know, anyway, but that, yeah, it's really fun. So, yeah, speaking of which, when I met, well, first in person, David, it was last summer, and on the back end of the Pastors and Leaders Conference at NNU, you were hosting an exploration to go check out the Nighthawks up there, which are so cool, and are also happen to be the NNU right mascot.
Yep.
But it was like there was traffic and it was a long drive, and we kind of got out there a little late to see them, but it's still one of the best memories I'm holding on to, because we were driving out in Idaho, which if you've never been in Idaho, it's just its own kind of beauty. And you know, we're just going rogue over in the fields, and then the sun's going down on one side, kind of over the river, and then the moon is rising up over the other horizon. And we're sort of, it's very dusky, and we're trying to see the Nighthawks, you know, doing their thing. But yeah, it's just so neat to just like hear and see you do your thing, and then, you know, here we are, some pastors and leaders from different, you know, points of life getting to experience this, which of course if you study ecology and that sort of thing, like this is just what you do. But for the rest of us, it's, you know, I think it's just such a treasure, and these are the worlds, I guess, in which we've got to bring together more, you know, and it's obviously one of the reasons we're, you know, recording these episodes and doing this podcast series and all of that. And so I really love that you know, even at work, that you guys are sort of grabbing the theology piece and all these other pieces. Tell me about some of those conversations, you know, that you guys have there. Is this pretty eye-opening for some students? Is this sort of like how are some of those conversations go, you know, bringing in like faith, ecology, you know, science and all of that? Like, you feel like there's some holistic development happening there, and et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that for me personally, that just affected so much of the trajectory of my life as a student. I wasn't a student at the semester study abroad program at Quirk. However, as a student in the Latin American Studies program, it was a very similar experience that captured a lot of what you just explained, holistic, where you're thinking about your faith and also learning ecology. So there's a combination of like being in wonder of the natural world around you and having that eye-opening experience, that wow experience, and then also connecting it to what does this mean about my relationship with God? How does this help me love the Creator more? How does that in turn help me think about the way the actions of my own life and the decisions of my own life are affecting creation? And ultimately, if we love the Creator, then we a way in which we show love to the Creator is by loving the creation. In fact, I think there's a you could argue there's our actions that do damage to the earth are damaging actions in our relationship with God. So for me, it was very important how it shaped me. I think that at Quirk, it's for every single group of students that come in there, they're coming in at different places with their understanding, their love for nature, love for the outdoors, and then also their understanding of their own faith. And at least from our experience, for my wife and I, when we saw students go through that process of having the wow experience in Costa Rica, along with the spiritual development, theological study, that's really powerful. And it's not just the study, academic study of it. It's also that these students are in a very transformative period of life where you get them out of their normal environment, and you throw them into some challenging experiences in a foreign country with a group of students that they're not normally with. All of a sudden, it just creates this very fresh learning environment. Some of that is due to just experiential learning in itself. I'm a big fan of experiential learning. I love the phrase, in doing, we learn. It seems to just kind of, if you're out there active, practicing what it is you're trying to learn, it becomes more real. You translate that to being in a foreign country, perhaps in a country where you don't speak the language, in situations that make you uncomfortable. Maybe it's the physical effort. Maybe it's the cultural exchange. There's something raw about that that leads to challenging, transformative experiences that then become lifelong lessons, lifelong anchor points. And I think that what we saw with students was that they would go home to the United States, extremely motivated and challenged to try to incorporate new ideals that they had in their lives. That's a hard place to go into. It's hard to go home and implement something into a life that's set when you go back into a life that's set. But I think that's a really fun challenge for the students to have. And to this day, we talk to students that we had down there over the 4 years that we were leading the study abroad program. And of course, we've been involved with a number of students since then, just because I've had the opportunity to be a professor, an instructor in the program since then for several years. But we talk to students today, 15 years later, who will say that semester in Costa Rica was the most special period of my college education and one of the most transformative periods of my life. And it led me to do this, and it led me to do that. And maybe it's not just ecology either. You know, we had many pre-med students down there that studied in the program. And one student in particular had a very hard time with the travel that we did in Nicaragua. Very hard time. One of the few students that I thought, not so sure that maybe we need to pull the student out of the experience and bring them in to us and give them a few creature comforts. But the student persevered through it, survived the challenge, and said, "I never want to go back there. I never want to go back to Nicaragua."
Yeah, it wasn't that's bound to happen,
right? It's challenging. It affects your psyche in ways that you can't expect sometimes when you get thrown into situations that you're just not maybe quite ready for, that put you out of your comfort zone. But it was about 5 years later, I saw on Facebook that she was in med school and she was a part of a team to Nicaragua serving a rural community in Nicaragua. And I sent her a message and said, "Whoa, you're in Nicaragua right now." And she said, "Yeah, I know. Can you believe it?" I said, "I was never coming back here." But it was that experience in Nicaragua and in Costa Rica that helped me understand that I can do hard things that make me be out of my comfort zone. I was really excited to come back here for this service experience in Nicaragua. And it just kind of shows how transformative those experiences as a college student can be for you for the rest of your life.
Man.
Yeah. One of the things that I experienced this past semester was some of the students had not thought about the intersectionality between what they're learning in their courses as a environmental science or a biology major or a pre-med major and their faith. Some of them were very new into learning, like who is God? How does God interact in my life? And some students have grown up in the church. It was a really interesting bunch that we had, but they had the opportunity to put language to what they had already been experiencing in their life. It's one of those things where you go to like this mountaintop or you go into this forest or you're looking out over the ocean and you feel like those feelings of there's something bigger than me, you know, this is magnificent and I can't really figure out why. And some of these students got to put language to that of like, oh, maybe this is an experience I'm having with God through nature, through my experiences in this beautiful place that I haven't experienced before, that is at the same time challenging and beautiful. And they got to connect that and say, you know, maybe some of these feelings that I felt for a long time when I get to witness creation being creation, you know, it's beautiful, it's messy, it's chaotic, there's life and there's death, all of these things. And they're like, oh yeah, maybe these feelings I'm feeling, maybe that's my experience with God. And I didn't realize that this whole time. And it was just such a blessing to watch, you know, these students have some formative experience, you know. And of course, it depends on the student. It depends on what's going on in their life outside of the semester program. But I think that's one of the places that the church can, for lack of a better word, capitalize on bringing people into experiences where they can have an interaction with God through the beautiful things that God has made for us and made around us. I think it's just everybody should take a trip to Costa Rica and should take a trip to San Gerardo to visit Quirk. Come on out.
Cool. Yeah, it does. It does make, you know, obviously that would be awesome. I'm like sitting here in my head thinking like, we need like a Creation Care Summit in Costa Rica. You know, like, I know that would be kind of a carbon footprint, but hashtag maybe worth it. You know, but it does really make you sort of churn some mental butter here about, you know, what does it look like to be a field station manager wherever you're at. And, you know, and I think, and not to sort of like philosophize or over-spiritualize our great conversation here, but to think about that in the context, I think, you know, a lot of times as a pastor, that might be a more helpful framework to think about sometimes in the environment, you know, your locale and your ministry and where you're planted and where you're out. You know, and I think particularly as pastors sometimes, you know, and of course I'm speaking from my situation over here, but that it feels more like a kind of grazing role sometimes, especially as we think about, like, you know, and it's a sort of another soapbox Josiah, I'm sure, could get on or has gotten on at some point about, you know, that we're here for a couple of years and then we're off to the next place for a couple of years, and that ministry can often not feel grounded or rooted in a place and an ecology and environment and in a group of people for too long. And so, I love this sort of idea of thinking about what is it, you know, what is it about a work posture, I'm going to say, that could be translated or could be encouraging for the local church wherever they're at. You know, and I love these three things, that, you know, the education and the conservation and the research. Man, we should be doing that everywhere. You know, I mean, obviously some places are much more biologically or biodiversity and rich, and in other places, I guess you could say. But I'm just sort of like ranting at this point. But I it's so encouraging to hear what you guys are doing. It makes me want to sort of, like, you know, I think we should be looking around us, like, how can I get more involved in my watershed and some of this research that's already happening around me locally. You know, not just individually either, but, you know, as a pastor with my church and that sort of thing.
Yeah, there are plenty of, you know, citizen science projects, and your local municipality are doing things in your area. You know, in here in Middle Tennessee, there's plenty of ag extensions or a naturalist program, you know, that have volunteer opportunities that you can do something. You can participate with your church and get people outside and show people the wonder of the space that you live. You know, like, how many people know that Tennessee is the salamander capital of the world? You know, go out and learn these things, because it is formative from our, at least from my experience, you know, so totally worth it.
Got the salamander right here in my pocket. Have you seen him? He's just
everywhere. I think it that kind of connects back to what Kayla was saying about trying to help students catch the vision of, it's not just learning the science and the ecological principles, but it's then communicating it as well too. And I think we don't do, let's say, the scientific community within our faith doesn't probably do a good enough job of networking and connecting into our faith communities. I'm not putting the blame on us necessarily. It's just something that we can do better of. And you know, for example, just speaking of our Nazarene institutions, we have fantastic ecologists and conservation biologists at many of our Nazarene institutions. And we all have interests and desires to be connected to communicating that to the general public. Boy, if my local church, and this is not a critique of my local church, but if my local church were to say, David, can you come in and do some seminars and lead some field trips for our congregation? I would love to hear that invitation. It's not because my local church doesn't like me or doesn't respect what I do, but it's probably just because it's not a part of our rhythm. It's not a part of what we see the ministries of our church being. And we go on some camping trips and whatnot. Everyone likes to be out in nature, but it would be really cool. I would love it if there was denominational program to have our landscapes of our church properties be converted to native landscaping just strictly to support pollinators. Boy, what a service to creation that would be if we didn't have grass and European shrubs, but we had native plants that supported pollinators and it was a part of the ministry to our community. That would be beautiful. And everyone in those congregations would be connected to it.
Reach, yeah, bro.
I've met quite a few people on like a water cleanup or invasive removal, you know, gathering and get together that I would probably not ever see come into my church community necessarily, but we are doing something together. You know, they see that somebody from the church cares about this thing too. And I think that's a wonderful opportunity for us as, you know, the Church of the Nazarene or Christians in general to say, hey, we care about this thing. We care about this gift that we've been given, and we'll meet you in the woods. You know, you don't have to come to us, but we'll meet you out there and we'll live life and take care and conserve and research and share, you know, in this really cool thing just outside our church walls.
Yeah, that's so good. And that's what's so good about the work is, you know, it's like, what? So tell me why a group of Nazarenes are down here in Costa Rica, you know, and you're able to say, well, this is what we believe God is up to in the world. You know, this is an extension of what it means to be the people of God and live as part of a planet, and that we want to know more and we want to learn more so that we can live into our God-created humanness more and understand and reflect that relationship in a more love-structured way. I hesitate because I don't want to throw you under the bus, but you did your PhD in ecology and evolutionary biology, is that right?
That's right. Yep.
Okay, cool. So and feel free to be like, let's just not go there. But I realize we really haven't talked about this in this podcast much, and or at all. And I tend to skim over this sort of evolutionary question a lot because I've got my own answers and own thoughts. But we did a panel at General Assembly recently, and someone brought this up, and I thought, you know what? I think a lot of people are, you know, at this step and asking some of these questions and so forth and so on. But I'd love to hear how you as a person of faith who studied evolutionary biology and all this stuff, like, you know, are those conversations that you're able to have or do have with students or other people around how you hold these things in tension or harmony with your faith and what you believe about God or creation, you know? And I know, obviously the Church of the Nazarene is sort of big tent on a lot of these conversations, but, you know, as someone who's studied some of this, I'd just love to hear your thoughts as, you know, even at Nazarenes for Creation Care, you know, people come up and we'll chat about these things. But yeah, no real question there, but I'd love to hear some of the juice from you.
Well, let's see if we can share anything meaningful here, or maybe with some coherency, I suppose.
Yes, please.
And maybe the reason why I would say that is because I've never prepared necessarily like an argument for why it is I have the biological understanding of and spiritual connection to where I am at right now. But I would say that I have gone through that process myself from a student to now instructor, where the understanding of evolutionary theory and how that does or doesn't actually affect my faith was a process I went through throughout. It started in college a little bit. Oh, to be honest, I didn't even breach the subject probably until a year post college. At the time when I was a student at NNU, the biology department did not do a good job of helping students understand evolutionary theory and also connect it to their faith in any way. And so I wasn't really confronted with that challenge. It was really when I was working as an environmental instructor at Mission Springs Outdoor Education, where I was working with strong Christians coming from other faith, Protestant faith traditions, from Calvin College or Wheaton or other Nazarene institutions as well, too, who were talking very openly about different evolutionary ideas as they relate to just how we understand biology. And I remember thinking, oh, this person, like, they have a very strong faith in relationship with the Lord. And they're talking about some issues that I kind of thought were off limits to me to think about and talk about. And it was very eye-opening, and it invited me into that discussion and that process where all of a sudden I started observing in my just biological observations, being out in nature, learning about birds, learning ecological principles, seeing different components and evidences of the evolutionary process. And it kind of kept pushing me forward in an uncomfortable space where I thought, well, if this is true, does that mean that what I have learned in my childhood and younger years, does that mean that some of these aspects of faith are not true? And I didn't feel like I needed to throw either out. I didn't feel like I needed to throw my faith out, or I didn't feel like I needed to throw out my scientific discovery out, but yet I still had not brought them together. And really, I remember one conversation I had with a professor in the biology department at Southern Nazarene University, Dr. Sharon Young, and an entomologist, and one of the really important players in the development of quirk down in Costa Rica as well, too. And I asked her just like a really simple question about, like, well, how do you reconcile this aspect of evolutionary theory and this part of your faith? And she said, well, what do you mean? There's no problem. I mean, I don't have to limit God in this way. We don't know factually that this is the way that God worked or in this timeline. So why do I need to put God in this box and say that that is the way that it happened? And I just remember that was so freeing for me. I had a hard time understanding it, really, because it really, my soul wasn't quite ready to be comfortable with it, but it was freeing to hear someone who I respected so much say that. Kind of gave me the permission to go forward and say, oh, okay, I can learn truth in scientific field, and if that's truth, then, and I believe all truth belongs to God, then that doesn't need to put in jeopardy what I believe about God as creator. I ended up finding myself in an ecology and evolutionary biology PhD program. It wasn't what I was seeking, but honestly, I am so grateful for all of the folks that I was surrounded by at the University of Oklahoma, where I've just learned really cool principles about evolutionary biology and evolutionary theory. And that puts me in a place right now where working with students that are coming into NNU in our biology department, some of our students come in where they would say, like, well, what do you mean? What do you mean you're uncomfortable with evolutionary theory? It makes sense to me, and I don't have a problem with it. But on the other end of the spectrum, we have students who are coming in who would say, well, if I believe what you are saying about evolutionary theory, that means that my faith has to be thrown out. And I think that I can meet those students in a place where I can say, no, absolutely not. Like, we believe in a God that is much bigger than our explanation of how life came to be on this planet. And if we believe in a God that can create in a short period of time just by speaking something into existence, then we can easily also believe in a God that has the ability to set forth a process, an amazing, unbelievable process that leads to such beautiful creation and even more intricate, challenging ways than than perhaps I had thought before. So it has not been the easiest process for me personally, but I'm grateful I'm in a position where I can be very understanding to anyone who is challenged by it. And I can kind of share my own experience. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's helpful to share.
Man, that's wonderful. No, thank you so much. I mean, I really appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. I think that's something that many of us think about, you know, and as we're having this creation conversation, I think that's one of the like roadblocks or speed bumps, I guess, people run into. And whether or not they're like ready to address that speed bump is on someone like your own personal timing, right? But that's all it needs to be is a speed bump. It doesn't have to be a wall. It doesn't have to be a complete, you know, roadblock to us discovering our own faith and discovering who God is and how God interacts into the world. So I appreciate that was quite cohesive, I would say. So great job on that. But as we're wrapping this up, one of the questions Caleb has been asking to most of our interviews, I feel like is unfairly broad.
Too true.
He always asks people what their favorite part of creation is, which is like, you know, how can you choose, right? But what for you is like a highlight when you go outside and, you know, get to experience creation, wherever that may be, what is the thing that comes to your mind that you have in this season of life been enjoying most?
All right, I'll give a short, fun answer. Short, fun answer is natural hot springs.
Mm-hmm.
Idaho is a fantastic place for geothermal activity. And there are hundreds of natural hot springs out in the mountains or out in the sage desert that are just waiting to be found and enjoyed. And I am always surprised. So it's kind of been a fun family excuse for us to get out and explore the natural areas of Idaho. We'll have a hot springs we're trying to get to. Inevitably, it never goes as well. We end up down the wrong road, or we have to ask for directions from folks who are trying to give us, send us to the wrong place, or it just takes longer than we think. But when we get there, it never ceases to amaze me how I can sit in that hot spring for like, you know, 2 hours and feel like I don't need to get out of these 6 inches of warm, hot water because it's just, I'm there in that spot and it's so relaxing. It's a good adventure to get out into these natural spaces. Maybe then from another broader answer, then perhaps sounds ecologically focused to begin with, but really it's just experiential. There's a portion of ecological study that's called landscape ecology. It's not native landscaping. That's not what I'm talking about. But landscape ecology is the study of the broader system, right? Where you see the way in which there's the structure of habitat creating the whole. I find that I love being in different landscapes where you see the combination of the geology to the vegetative structure to then how that affects what vertebrates are there to what invertebrates are there, the aquatic ecology that's going on, all within that system at that broad kind of perspective of the landscape. To me, that's just getting to a vista or a viewpoint where you can see the interaction of a wide space that has intact habitat, functioning ecosystem, the organisms that are supposed to be there are supposed to be there. And maybe even in more beautiful way, you see a little bit of human activity as well too, where you can see that humans are there on that landscape, but they have not devastated it. They're living within that landscape. and working cohesively within the landscape without just removing it. That's a beautiful moment for me. That's kind of a not great way of just saying I love being in beautiful places. And of course, we got to end up seeing some cool birds in those beautiful places as well too. But yeah, when I think about traveling, I've done, you know, most recently a course that my colleague and I led to Kenya, from spots, location to location to location, whether it was the rainforest, the montane forest, a mangrove forest, each spot brought a new sense of joy of like, wow, look at these, how these trees are different from the last spot we were in. And the feel, it's just, you can just feel it's different. I probably said that to our students way too many times. Can't you just feel the difference here? And I get excited about that difference from spot to spot.
Ooh.
Beautiful.
I love the lens that you're wearing. I think that's one of the real treasures and highlights in this conversation is that, you know, because number one, you've seen, you know, over this, the span of your years doing this work, you've been able to see a lot of different environments as well. And then also have the, you know, the gift and of understanding these spaces better and how they're operating. You know, I think that that's, man, that's really beautiful. And I think we all need more of that. You know, and I can't help but think that's how God sees these places as well. And, you know, and particularly thinking about the juxtaposition of like how humans have generally behaved in a lot of these spaces and what we've done. And yeah, it is hard to reconcile. And, you know, on one hand, you appreciate, you know, at least I've found myself grieving a lot and sort of scratching my head of how we can do some of this differently. And, you know, I was just down in sort of southern Florida. You know, it's just a different habitat down there. And number one, it's really hot right now. But there are just my friend, you know, who I was visiting just kept saying to me how Florida's trying to kill you. Actively. And, you know, and there we looked out his back door. There's this huge iguana coming out of a hole and, you know, mosquitoes swarming. And there's like, he was telling me how there've been some panthers around. I'm like, but we're just in like, you know, the burbs ? Florida, whatever that is. And for whatever reason, that just sort of area just felt so colonized to me. Like we as humans came, we wanted to be in proximity for some warmness, some water. But to me, everything about that area didn't feel like humans were supposed to be this here. But because nature's trying really hard to keep the natural world in, and it seems like humans in our current sort of consumption habits are trying really hard to keep the area another way. And it felt very like, you know, this not a great coexistence in some regard. And so, yeah, that really does make me think of that. So, yeah, and I think that's a lens. Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you offering that because... I think it helps us, yeah, see more of what I think God sees in a lot of these places and then help us ask that question of like, how can we make this more holy, I guess in a way, more holistic, more right relatedness. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, on a much less existential or theological note, do you have a favorite bird? I know it's like kind of a really tough question for you, but I don't think I've asked you. And if you can't choose a favorite bird, what's a bird that you hope to add to your life list that you haven't seen yet?
Interesting. Okay. I do get asked that question a lot. And sometimes I skirt the question, you know, I'll just give an answer like, oh, they're all my favorite.
Children.
After going out, someone, you know, to look for birds, someone might say, well, did you see any good birds? Like, yeah, they were all good. Yeah, I liked them all. You know, I did used to say it would be impossible to say what a favorite bird is, because no matter what you're, it kind of goes back to the landscape idea. No matter where you are, there's some really cool birds to see and really interesting birds to see. However, in my sentimental years after leaving the beautiful home in Costa Rica, that where you could look out your kitchen window and see a resplendent quetzal feeding on the guacatillo tree right out your kitchen window, I did realize that, yes, I think that maybe the resplendent quetzal of Central America is my favorite bird. It just has so much significance to me. Actually, as an undergraduate student, when I was in that study abroad program, I did spend 2 weeks at Quirk, not in a program at Quirk, but just as a visitor to Quirk. And I did a 2-week project on nest observations of breeding quetzals, where I just spent about 5 hours a day in a camouflage blanket watching quetzal nests, making notes what was going on at the quetzal nest. And they are really, really cool, fun first field experience, really, for me as a young field biologist, that I did truly kind of fall in love with that bird. And then so much meaning to my family as I was married and lived in Costa Rica, had my first kid in Costa Rica, all surrounded with the quetzal as our neighbor. So yes, resplendent quetzal truly, I think, is, if not my favorite, one of my favorite birds. A bird that I would love to add to my life list that I don't know if I will get to or not, is just one that every time I see it, I think, no, that is not a real bird. And it's called a shoebill. And it's this, you know, this wading bird in Africa that...
It's huge.
Has this bill that's like a boot. That's why it's called a shoebill. And they look fake and made up. Be spending some more significant time in Kenya in this upcoming year. I don't think I'll be able to see it in Kenya, and I don't think I'll be able to make a trip out of Kenya to see it, but I would love to see it someday.
I will confirm, they're goofy. I actually have a laminated cutout of the head of a shoebill stork attached to one of my plant pots for some reason. I just think they're so cool that I like cut out all these shoebill stork heads and like put them places to like play a prank on one of my coworkers because they are just the goofiest looking bird. But yeah, I was in Michigan this past month, I guess, and had not seen a sandhill crane before. And then I like surprisingly came upon a sandhill crane. And you know, birds that are tall and lanky, or just like not a little brown job, you know what I mean? Like yeah. Not your standard bird shape, are shocking when you're not prepared to see them.
The first time I saw the Jabiru in Costa Rica, I said to Sarah, my wife, I said, that thing could eat my head. That was my reaction to that bird. It could fit my head in its mouth and swallow my head.
Wow. I think we might have just found the title to this episode. That's amazing. I do feel like we're going to need some links to all these birds in the show notes, and possibly some of David's research or something. So that sounds amazing.
Well, thank you so much, David, for having this conversation with us. We appreciate it. I feel like it's not fair to say I have a favorite episode, but I have truly enjoyed this episode, partially because, you know, I'm following in your footsteps at work, and I owe a lot of the relationship that I now have with the community to the work that you did while you were there. And we're just really grateful for the work that you're doing all over the world, but also in your kind of like home base in Idaho at Northwest Nazarene. You're doing great stuff, and we're just really lucky to have you doing the work.
Well, thanks for inviting me for this conversation, and I've enjoyed it I've enjoyed it very much myself. So I appreciate that. And I'm excited that all these conversations are happening.
So good.
Pastor Podcast was created and produced by Byron Certain and Josiah Jones. If you enjoyed this podcast, then please be sure to rate, review, or subscribe, and visit themillennialpastor.com for more podcasts like it.